debts amounting to more than $1 trillion, the ringgit. You know, before we never talk about billions even. We talk about millions, but now we talk about trillions, 12 zeros. That is what is meant by trillion. And the problem is, how do we repay this loan? Najib took the easy way out. He sold land to raise money to pay debts. But we can't keep on selling land in order to raise money, or we will soon find that there is no Malaysia, except some foreign territory. So now we are busy trying to do change things in order that we will be able to resolve the financial problem without hurting the country. I am lucky because for these studies, in-depth studies of the wrong things done by the previous government, I was able to rely on a group of people whom we call the Eminent Persons Group. These people have had some experience in administration, in financial dealings, etc. And they have now discovered the extent of the problem faced by the government. It is far more than what we anticipated. So it will take us a long time in order to resolve the problem. Lots of people are waiting, when are we going to arrest Dato' Sri Najib? Well, it's not so easy. We need to collect the kind of evidence that will stand up in courts. If we fail to do that, he might win. Just think what would happen if he wins a court trial and he's found not guilty. Then all the promises that we made, all the bad things that we said about him would be questioned by the people who voted us in. But we hope that we'll be able to gather enough evidence to charge him in court, and hopefully he will be found guilty, hopefully. We don't know, because we have, unlike the previous government, we don't have any influence over the court. We have decided that we will be truly democratic in the sense that the people's choice must be respected. We must understand democratic rules and procedures. We must not take power into our hands. Instead, power in the country must be divided between the legislative, the executive, and the judiciary. So this is a kind of check and balance to make sure that none of us do the wrong things. So it will not be easy for us to ride roughshod over the country and just throw people into jail. So I think that would be a relief to Dato' Sri Najib. But as you know, he's not allowed to leave the country. Lots of people nowadays disappear. Even Jamal Tongkol has disappeared. So we don't know who else will disappear. But we hope that before they can disappear, we can, take the law, go through the laws of the country, and punish the people guilty of breaking the law. But to come back to the restructuring and rehabilitating the country, it's not going to be easy. In the first place, this $1 trillion over dollars loan will have to drag us down, and we will have not enough money to run the government as we did in the past. So some people may suffer, because they want us to be straight and not be involved in corruption, the government would have no money to pay for things like scholarships and things like that. So there is a price for everyone to pay. Najib used to steal money, sorry. Well, he used stolen money to boost everything. Everybody gets paid by the government. Fishermen who do not fish get paid salaries. Ketua kampung get paid. Ketua jawatan kuasa kemajuan kampung gets paid. Everybody gets paid. But we can't sustain them. Even the BRIM thing cannot be sustained by us. But we will create another fund, another gift for the people, but confined only to those people who deserve to have help. People who are earning, already are able to have a fairly good life, will not get any Pakatan Harapan's version of BRIM. We don't call it BRIM, of course. We have to call it by some other name. We don't want to inherit their bad habits. So a lot of people will not be able to perform the Hajj this time because the government will not be paying for their Hajj with stolen money. If you want us to, we can steal money and pay, but we don't believe in stealing money. So that is the situation in the country today. However, people are very, very supportive. Somebody decided that they should donate some money to the government. It's not on our urging. They, on their own, decided they should help the government by donating money to the government. And within one day, we collected $7 million. Now, voluntarily coming from the public, without any urging by us, by now we have more than 40 million. Of course, 40 million is not very big. When you have to pay debts of 1 trillion, 40 billion is nothing. But the gesture is much appreciated. It shows how much the people are concerned about the country. They want the country to be well off, to be able to pay its debts. To the extent that they can help, they volunteer to help. I'm very grateful to them. We are all grateful to them. And even in schools, little boys collect money to give to the government because they know the government is short of funds. But we can see some ways for us to overcome the huge losses due to the last government. We are still finding more. Every time we examine anything, we find that money has been shunted away or stolen or just hidden away somewhere. Recently, we decided there is to be a multi-purpose, a pipeline for all kinds of material. The pipeline would cost some billions of dollars. And then we discovered that the agreement made by the company with the government is that the government will pay at a specified date, not according to the progress of the work done. So now we have paid 80% for the pipeline, which is only 13% completed. How we are going to get the rest of the money, I don't know. But these are the kinds of things that we find in the government. Everywhere we look, we find wrong things being done. Money being stolen, hidden. Money being used for the wrong things. So we have a tough time to deal with all these problems and rehabilitate the country. But God willing, we will do it. I hope to be able to do something in the first 100 days, as we promised. We will get rid of GST, for example. We will get rid of fake news laws. We will get rid of oppressive laws where people can be arrested without trial, and then if they die, no inquest is to be carried out. It's a license for murder. That is what the government has, the law says. But we will do away with such laws. In the business front, on the business front, we will be very friendly towards business people. At one time we used to have Malaysia Incorporated, where the government and the private sector works as one body, trying to improve the performance of that body being the nation. Now we want to go back to working with the private sector and treating them as friends, not as enemies. We want to do things quickly. We want to approve things quickly. We don't want any hanky-panky. There will be, 10 days for everything. For example, if there is anything, any contract being given out by the government, the person getting the contract must carry out the contract. If he sells the contract to somebody else, that contract will be nullified. So you cannot sell APs and IPPs and the like to other people when you get it free from the government. So there are many things that we will do to eradicate corruption. I'm aware that it's not easy to eradicate corruption, but we will do our best. Certainly we will not ever be like the last regime where corruption is carried out right at the top. And below there will be lots of people who say that since the boss is corrupt, we also should be corrupted, and we should get less than what the boss gets. But that is not going to be so this time. Somebody tells me that a fish rots from the head of the fish head. So we are not going to have rotten fish at the head. We are going to be very strict about this, which means that some people will suffer. But we have to pay the price for eradicating corruption in our country. There is a new body being set up to look into corruption, and already the first meeting was held in which the steps to be taken to eradicate corruption has been enunciated, and the people concerned have been identified who will make sure that corruption would be eliminated. And if corruption is eliminated, we will save about 30% of our money. And with that 30%, we can do lots of other things. So these are some of the things that we have done, and I understand that you would like to ask questions. Don't be too harsh on me. You can ask any question you like. Okay.
Thank you very much, Yang Amat Berhormat Tun Dr. Mahathir. Congratulations on a fantastic victory. We are all very, very supportive and very, very excited. My name is Chua Yao Han. I'm a Malaysian who came to Japan in 1978. I'm a long time in Japan. My company, my business now in Japan is I'm a corporate advisor to 7 different industries in Japan. And I'm bringing a lot of Japanese investments to Malaysia. Like all the Nippon Airways with AirAsia, Yamato, Kuroneko Yamato with GDEX, Tokyo Land with DTJIA, and Scitex with Tamura. So I'm working on those business, and with your more emphasis on local policy, I'm expecting to be a lot more busy going forward. My question today is not about Japan-Malaysia the investments. My background is investment banking. For 25 years, I've been international investment banking. I would like to raise a concern and for the good of the country, for the good of the country, a lot of people don't see that. But because of my background, I see a lot of potential risk that is engulfing the country right now. Although if you are making a lot of positive changes to the country, which is going to be very good for the country in the long run, and we are all fully supportive of that. But in the process of making that, on the international world right now, the emerging markets, money is being pulled out from emerging markets. Going back to the US, US is raising interest rate, and money is being pulled out from Argentina, from Brazil, from Turkey, and for all those, and from Malaysia as well. The emerging markets are under attack. Not as serious, but it's under attack. While the changes are making the positive changes for the country, all these bankers, they can be your friend and they can be your enemy. My advice right now, my suggestion right now, make them your friend. Engage them. And engage the credit rating agencies, engage the bond traders, engage the bankers, so that they will be on our side because they are very positive about the changes happening in Malaysia today. But we are not engaging them enough. And bankers don't like to be ignored, unfortunately. So if you engage them properly, they will be on our side, they'll be very supportive of our country and they will not do crazy things to the country. I have survived the Black Monday of 1987. The Asian financial crisis of 1997, the mortgage crisis of 2008, and soon you have gone through, yes, we have gone through the 1997 Asian financial crisis. You know how tough?
Mr. Chua, can we move on to the question?
Yes, the question is. How are you going to actively engage the international financial community on the sovereign credit rating fund? And on the bond markets and on the bond market with the bond market with the, how are you going to actively engage the international finance community for the sake of the country?
Thank you. Well, I should have thought that knowing what we are doing is for the good of the country, to reduce our debts, for example, to recover the economy, the financial health of the country. This in itself should persuade foreign investors to come to Malaysia. But unfortunately, they respond to immediate results. Of course, in immediate result, for example, we have to announce that we have a big debt. And they react to that by pulling out their money. It doesn't help. You see, we are trying to reduce the debts and rehabilitate the country. But if you announce bad news, they will take their money out. This is the problem that we face. At the same time, we have a lot of problem trying to find suitable people to speak for us. For 9 years, they have been speaking a language that is not very welcome for the business community. To find people who can speak the right kind of language, explain the situation in this country, is not very easy. We would depend on people like you to tell people that what we are doing now is to rehabilitate the country. It will be good for business. But if you pull out your funds, it will be much more difficult for us to rehabilitate the country. We are doing our best. And I think we need to be very cautious also about foreign direct investment. We do not consider as FDI when you bring capital in, buy huge chunks of land in Malaysia, build cities which Malaysians cannot live in. You want to bring foreigners to live in those cities. That is not foreign direct investment. Foreign direct investment is about bringing in capital and technology, setting up plants in Malaysia, employing Malaysians, both workers and engineers, and producing goods for the domestic market as well as for export.
Fine, thank you for taking my question. Actually, I'm a lawyer. from Malaysia, last time from Zaid Ibrahim. And I'm now a partner in an international law firm in Singapore. And I used to be here from 2001 to 2008, and I attended many delegations by Tan Sri Rafidah and also Dato' Sri Mustafa Muhammad. And bringing, encouraging investment from Japan to Malaysia. I work in the oil and gas industry as a lawyer. So my question is, also having worked for KPMG, it's one thing to address the bleeding from all these posts of corruption that was happening under the previous government, but how do you propose to encourage more foreign investment into Malaysia? For example, there's no post of international trade minister or even domestic trade minister. And these are very basic, these are quite regular positions in previous cabinets, also under the administration. So how are there anybody actively going overseas to conduct trade delegations, actively offering incentives, for example, for foreign companies, foreign countries to invest back into Malaysia? It's one thing to stop the flow, the bleeding, and also another to increase the investment coming to Malaysia, because it's very competitive right now. I'm based in Singapore, and Singapore government has a lot of tax incentives. And a lot of international companies set up a holding company in Singapore before they go across Southeast Asia. So I'm really concerned about Malaysia. I'm from Johor Bahru. And you're right that many land sales are unproductive because there's a lot of land sales going in JB, my hometown, selling to China. And it's not really increasing the technology.
Okay, sir, thank you. Thank you.
Well, as you know, we have not yet completed forming our new cabinet. We have only started with a core cabinet of 13 people, but that does not include international trade. There is no Ministry of International Trade. But if you think that is very important, we will consider whether we will create this ministry or not. So I would like to thank you for your suggestion. But I believe this is the last question. Can I have my last seat? Okay. I think lots of people identify me with the Look East policy. And lots of people think, at one time they thought the Look East policy was so much nonsense. Why don't you look at the West? But I thought that Look East policy was very important because Eastern people and Western people have different sets of values. Much of the values of the Western people have deteriorated over the years. But in the East, we find the good Eastern values are still being practiced. When I came to Japan in 1961, that was the first time I came to Japan, the country was still in a state of in shambles because of the war. Much of the country was destroyed. And I watched as Japanese people worked very hard in order to rebuild their country. And sure enough, the result was that Japan very quickly became the second biggest economy in the world. From a defeated country, from a destroyed country, Japan was able to rebuild itself fast rate and effectively. I ask myself, why is it that Japanese can do this when others cannot do? Others which have never suffered from the war were still unable to grow their country and prosper their people. I found that the reason why the Japanese succeeded in rebuilding their country, the reason lies in their work ethics, their value system. The work ethics is very important. If you have the wrong way of working, if you are laid back, you are not hardworking, you are not diligent, you don't take pride in your work, you will fail. But the Japanese, as you know, have a very strong sense of shame. If they do something that is bad or they fail to do something, in the old days, they would commit harakiri. They would kill themselves because they were ashamed of their failures. That sense of shame is still here today. For the Japanese, it is about the quality of their products. If their products are of poor quality, they would feel ashamed of their products. If you look at the way they produce these bamboo things for their tea ceremony, they were all done perfectly, exactly as they wanted it, of a high quality, even with bamboo. But of course, when they move on into engineering, into automotive, into other kinds of machine, they do it so well that their machines eventually outbid and were much more popular than machines that were coming from the West. As you know, Toyota began as a company that produced machinery for the sewing industry, for the textile industry. Their product was so good that even in those days, they were able to sell their products in competition with the machines in England from Lanchester, because their products were superior. This concentration on not feeling ashamed of whatever you do is a very strong incentive for them to do the best they can. But in Malaysia, we didn't have this kind of value system. We don't feel ashamed of what if we produce sloppy products which are of poor quality. We just want to do the work from 8 to 4 o'clock, and then you are finished. Whether what you did was good or not did not seem to matter. But the Japanese are different. They want to produce the best that they can. That is why Japanese motor cars are very much valued in Malaysia and in elsewhere. They are usually of very high quality. We should have this sense of shame in Malaysia. In Malaysia, you are ashamed if you are caught standing naked. That's malu lah. That's all you think about shame. But to feel ashamed that you have failed to deliver the goods, that is not a Malaysian value. But if we can learn from the Japanese and adopt their idea that it is shameful to produce poor quality goods or to fail to deliver the goods, then you are bound to succeed because your product will be of the highest quality possible. That was what I noticed when I first came here in 1961. I saw the Japanese working and working very hard to rebuild their country, which was going to be to have the Olympics held in 1964. They were working very hard. And if you read the book by Akio Morita, the founder of Sony, he will tell you that initially, when they were poor, they used to pay their workers with only one bowl of rice and some soy sauce. But their workers work hard, build the company, build the country. And today, the Japanese worker is much more well paid than many workers in other countries, and certainly better than workers in Malaysia. So when we formulated the Look East policy, it is not just about investment from Japan. It is not just about coming to study in Japan. It is about acquiring also the Japanese work ethics, the Japanese sense of shame whenever they fail to deliver what they promised to deliver. I hope all of you who are in Japan will notice this and try to emulate this, because if you come back with that kind of Japanese thinking, Japanese value system, Japanese sense of shame, Malaysia will be like Japan within a short space of time. I thank you.